From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Welcome, hello, everyone. Yes, and hello, Bernie. Everyone, this is the Mind Health Matters show with Dr. Bernie Siegel. You can hear it Thursday and Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time. And if this is the first time you're listening, Bernie's show is right here on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. We're a holistic Boston-based internet radio station with all the bells and whistles where you can listen anywhere, anyhow, any podcast directory. You can ask Alexa anyhow and anywhere, as I say. And we are proud to be the immediate partner for the Omega Institute. Well, Bernie has an excellent guest for you today. He is the author of The Practice of Embodying Emotions, A Guide to Improving Cognitive, Emotional, and Behavioral Outcomes. And it's by North Atlantic Books. And I'm speaking about Dr. Raja Selvam. He is the developer of integral somatic psychology, an approach based on a paradigm of embodied cognition, emotion, and behavior in cognitive and affective neuroscience. He's a licensed clinical psychologist and a senior trainer in Dr. Peter Levine's Somatic Experiencing Program. And so over to you, Bernie, and welcome to the show, Raja.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Raja, yes. I don't know if I'll have enough time to talk to you because you make me want to say so much from my background. But let me start with one point because life is so different now. 1989, June 12th, New York Magazine, top of the cover. Dr. Love, Bernie Siegel and his controversial theories of self-healing. And it was quite an article, which when it came out, I wasn't thrilled with it because of how critical it was. I read it again the other day accidentally, and I thought it was a nice article. But, you know, that's 50 or 40 years later. My mother liked it when it came out, but you know, of course, I'm her son. But it was so, you know, unbelieved by the health professionals, medical professionals, you know, that your mind has anything to do with it, your feelings have anything to do with it. It's such nonsense. And in reading your book, which, as I say, I love The Practice of Embodying Emotions, because I saw this happening with people. And something I tell people now is, don't hide your unusual stories, things that have happened in your life that are mystical or whatever. Don't be afraid to talk about them. Because, some people may say that's crazy, but there are a few others who are going to say, wow, I'm glad that happened and you talked about it because now I can talk to you and feel better about it. It's the way I felt when I read about your birthing. And it happening. And what I learned at the hospital and in my office, people literally came to see me as a doctor. Why? I've learned you're not a normal doctor, so I came because I know I can talk to you. And at the hospital, they all think I'm crazy, so I paged you because I know I can talk to you. And let me tell you one about embodying emotions. A lady named Claire Sylvia, who wrote a book, A Change of Heart, she called me to come to her room. I came. She said, I've had a heart-lung transplant, and they all think I'm acting crazy because when I woke up after surgery, they said, what would you like to eat or drink? And what came out of me was, I'll have a beer and chicken McNuggets. And she said, I've never had those things. Where did that come from? And she thought, wow, it must be coming from the heart and lungs that are in me.
Yes, yes.
And to make a long story short, she said, one night, I go to sleep, a young man tells me his name, says we're together forever.
Mm-hmm.
And
in a dream. In a dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a dream. She was sleeping.
Yeah.
She said, oh, when she told me his name, I went to the hospital and said, give me the name of the donor so I can see if this is the truth and it's her donor. We cannot give away that personal information. So her family started looking through obituaries in the New England area, and, of course, they came across his obituary, and we called the family, and they said, oh, yes, yes, his organs have been donated. Now, what else had happened? She had taken a motorcycle ride for the first time in her life. What did the family say? He loved motorcycles. He died in an accident with a bucket of chicken McNuggets stuffed in his jacket, and you took the ride on his birthday.
Wow.
So she ended up writing a book. Now, you can't deny that. And I found that by telling these stories, even doctors might say, that's just a story. Okay.
Yes.
But it's the truth. And the other that I read about that I want to bring up to you, tell people, I mean, which proves embodying emotions. Tell people what happened at your birth, because you said it was very difficult and what happened. Explain what you put in the book.
Well, what happened is that my mother was all of 16 years old. She had already given birth to my sister 2 years prior at the age of 14. She got married at the age of 13. And we were, you know, me in utero and my mother were in the care of a midwife who was quite inexperienced. So to cut the long story short, we had 72-hour labor that my grandmother thought would end in the death of mother and baby. But we survived. You know, I was stuck in the birth canal and the umbilical cord was wrapped around my neck, and somehow made it through. It was a vaginal surgery delivery, and somehow made it through. But that remains the single most, you know, influential trauma of my life. And what I went through in the birth, the constriction that happened around my cranium, etc., continues to show up when I'm extremely stressed. You know, emotionally stressed, afraid of my survival for one reason or another. So that, I think, set me on this path of finding a way to heal, you know, myself, but also through that, find ways to help others heal.
Yeah. And now let me tell you my story.
Please.
What made me feel close to Jesus also, in a sense. My mother had severe hyperthyroidism and was told not to become pregnant, that it might kill her. But her mother said, oh, you know, I want a grandchild. So my mother went ahead. I mean, she was married. even though Jesus' mother wasn't. But she went ahead, became pregnant. As she approached the time of delivery, her body was so depleted, she had absolutely no strength in it and couldn't deliver the child. I mean, she had labor signs, but there was nothing happening. And she said the doctor finally came in and said, you're never going to survive a cesarean section, so we have to reach in and just get that kid out of there. What they would call a high forceps delivery, where you can't see the baby, so you don't know where you're putting the forceps. I mean, you're really just reaching up and clamping.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, they pulled you out, and we both survived, but this was, I didn't learn what I'm going to tell you till I had grown and had some medical knowledge, because the family album does not have a picture of me for months. And even then, it's from a distance. There was always a covered carriage. And one day, I finally said to my mother, why didn't anybody take any pictures of me? And that's when I heard my story for the first time, what I looked like. My mother said, these are her exact words, when they gave us, you know, you, mm-hmm. they gave us a purple melon.
Mm-hmm.
And we wrapped you in blankets and hid mm-hmm. you and took you home and covered you in a carriage in the backyard so nobody would get upset.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I had learned about body reaction, children who don't develop when they're not touched, massaged, you know, loved. I said, well, then how did I survive? Mm-hmm. You put a baby in a carriage, cover it up mm-hmm. and leave it there, mm-hmm. it's going to mm-hmm. die. It's mm-hmm. getting no mm-hmm. stimulation. Mm-hmm. She said, oh, I never forget these words. Oh, my mother took you, poured oil mm-hmm. all over you, and pushed mm-hmm. everything back where it belonged 5 and 6 mm-hmm. times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Then
that's
I realized
really touching.
I was the most loved kid on the planet. Grandma's coming in and massaging me every few hours. Now, this is why I bring it up, about embodying emotions. 50 years later, I had a shaved head, which Jung said, and I know is true, is what monks do when they need to uncover their spirituality.
Oh, wow, I need to remember that.
As a surgeon, I went through a period that I call the cover-up in my life.
Yeah.
And even when I painted my portrait, I painted myself in a cap, mask, and gown, all hidden.
Oh, wow. Wow.
You don't know it's me. But it's burying our feelings. That's what I was doing as a surgeon. I didn't know where to put all this stuff. Nobody taught me that. I cared about people. It was painful to see what they were going through. I ultimately, you know, as I say, went and shaved my head. But what was interesting, the first time with the shaved head, my wife and I went for our routine massage that we always got, and the guy who did it said, you know, I'm so busy today, I can't do two people. Can one of you have my wife, who's a therapist, massage them? I said, well, my wife loves your coarse hands, so go ahead, I'll have your wife do my head and body.
Mm-hmm.
I lay down on the table, she comes over, oils her hands, and starts working on my bare head. And I went back to being an infant.
Wow. The memory.
Incredible.
The memory. Yeah. This is because what happened.
When they were done, I opened my eyes in complete bliss after having been an infant for maybe 15 or 20 minutes. And the room was filled with people.
Mm.
And I said, what the hell are you all doing here? And her husband was standing next to the table. He said, we thought you had a heart attack or a stroke. You were gone. We couldn't communicate with you. And I said, I got a story to tell you. I went back to being an infant, and I couldn't talk to you. And that's why when I read that in your, you know, book, it is so true. When you've lived it, you know it's true. And our life is stored in our bodies. You know, whether it's a transplanted organ or the experience that you've had. And I learned that because as I began to do, you know, support groups, it wasn't typical doctors. People were talking about their life and their feelings and everything else. And one more thing, then I promise I'll stop and turn it over to you. But all this is in your book. You know, it's hard for me to not connect. One was a simple one, was when people have a serious illness or problem, I say, what does it feel like? What word would you use to describe it? And I get words like failure, pressure, and on, roadblock. I mean, everybody has their own words. And then I say to them, what is it in your life that fits that word? The lady who was being admitted to the hospital with severe migraines, pressure, it was her marriage. About 10 minutes later, she said, I feel better. I'm going to go home and work on my marriage now. She didn't get admitted to the hospital. The lady who said failure said, well, cancer, my body failed. I said, that's not my question. Where does failure fit? Oh, my parents committed suicide when I was a child. I must have been a failure as a child.
Yes.
You know, and that's why your book, The Practice of Embodying Emotions, what all those people were experiencing was the emotions in their bodies.
And
I learned from it too, as a matter of fact. When I was traveling with my wife all over the world, lecturing and teaching, I developed dizzy spells. I'd get out of bed, and one day I got out of bed, and the room starts spinning. And I said, why don't you do what you tell your patients to do? What are you going through? Well, the world is spinning around. I said, right. You're doing too damn much. You're spinning all over the world. So why don't you slow down, take it easy, and give your body a rest? And I did. And the dizzy spells, the vertigo, all disappeared. I didn't have to keep treating myself to get better. And
lovely.
So I've lived those things. Now, let me, you're our guest. Let us give you some time. Go ahead, Roger. What do you want to share with the world?
Let me begin, and then I will be guided by your questions. The practice of embodying emotions is a relatively simple practice, and that therapists can use to help their clients, but also readers, listeners can also do, because they have emotions and they have their bodies. They have their awareness. What the practice is simply this. If I have an emotion that is unbearable, what I do in part is that I deny it psychologically. We call it psychological defense. But more often than not, when something happens to us as early as birth, you know, then the brain knows how to bring in physiological defenses or blocks. Now, what that does is that, you know, an emotion which is unpleasant is already a state of stress and dysregulation. We have talked a lot about it. And the emerging science of emotions clearly, you know, supports that idea. And when we have an unpleasant emotion, the body is already in a state of dysregulation and stress. Now, on top of it, if we try to constrict it away by, let's say, blocking the diaphragm, so the joints or muscles, then the level of stress and dysregulation even goes further, creating what we call, you know, psychophysiological symptoms. Now, what used to be called psychosomatic symptoms in the older days. And so if we can find a way to expand the emotional experience throughout the body, then everything can improve. The body can improve, the energy can improve, you know, our cognition and behavior can improve. That is a little more complicated to explain, but I will get to it later. So the whole idea is, if you have sadness, you're sitting in grief, I'll give you an example that will be clear to the readers. A woman I was working with had asthma. She was suffering from asthma. She had childhood asthma, but that resolved. She no longer had it, but as an adult, she developed childhood asthma. And I write about this in my book. And I asked her when it developed. She said a year ago. And I said, what significant events took place around the time? She said, well, I can't think of any except that I broke up with the love of my life. And I said, you broke up with the why? And she said, well, you know, he was disappointing me. Even though he was the love of my life, I had high expectations for him. He was disappointing me. So I broke up with him. And I said, what feelings do you have about it? And she said, you know, I don't have any feelings about it because I thought about it and made the decision. Therefore, I'm not affected by it. I've worked through it. And I didn't buy that as a psychologist, you know, I didn't buy that because it was just too much of a coincidence. So I started to work with her, with the you know, trying to have her think about the connection she had with him. And then I even had her imagine his leaving her, walking off into the horizon. And somewhere there, we could get something in the body, you know, the awareness of sadness came up. And I, you know, even before that, I just had a feel how bad it felt to see him walking around, walking off. And then that is an emotion. You know, when we're looking for emotions, we often look for a definite list of emotions that psychologists often tell us we have. But emotion can be anything. A good definition of emotion is anything that affects us, you know, in a positive way or a negative way. The impact of an event or a situation that has on our well-being, that is nothing but the brain and body physiology, can be called emotion. That's the definition they use. So she is affected negatively by the situation of the breakup that she initiated. Now, she had no support growing up for emotions. So she's not aware of it. And then she, you know, tightens the body or builds defenses on top of having a very significant emotional loss. And of course, what that does is it increases the, you know, it blocks blood flow, blocks nervous system flow, you know, it blocks lymphatic flow, all kinds of vital flows that keep us regulated. And then, of course, the person ends up with a psychosomatic or psychophysiological symptom, and that's what I suspected she had, but I was not sure, because asthma can be due to, you know, allergies and, you know, genetic disposition and so on. But here, I somehow managed to get her to sense a little bit of sadness, not much, in this chest, in the throat, and around the eyes. And we didn't realize, I mean, we both of us agreed at the end of the session, not much seems to have happened except getting in touch with me feeling bad about the breakup and a little later feeling sad about the breakup, expanding it in a very superficially in the face and the throat and the chest. And then I met her 6 months later. She was in a training I taught, you know, twice a year.
Raji, if you could just hold that thought, we need to take our first break. So to hold that thought, and then you met her elsewhere. So we'll be back, everyone. Don't go away. Right. More with Dr. Right. Bernie and Mind Health Matters and his guest, Raja Selvam.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every Thursday and Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom weaved through his delightful stories. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Why are we here? How can we be happy? Questions asked from millennials to boomers. Crappy to Happy, sacred stories of transformational joy, answers them using true stories of grit, grace, and love. James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy, wrote in the foreword, "This book is a seminar about emerging truths and offers grounded solutions through the art of the comeback." Dr. Bernie Siegel, a contributing author, wrote, "Bodies die, but spirits and consciousness survive and recycle." So, grab some tissues, open your book, and prepare to cry and laugh till it heals. Crappy to Happy by Reverend Ariel Patricia and Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. Available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksellers worldwide.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Looking for a fun and relaxing getaway? Omega Rest and Rejuvenation Retreats are a great way to unwind and renew your spirit. Sit and read in the garden, explore the woodland trails, or try a daily yoga or meditation class.
You can stretch your body, quiet your mind, and do as much or as little as you choose. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org or call 800-944-1001.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back. You're listening to Dr. Bernie Siegel and Mind Health Matters on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. If you'd like to get in touch with Bernie, you can go on his site. It's BernieSiegelMD.com. Just as it sounds, Bernie Siegel, SIEGELMD.com. And his guest, Raja Selvam, he can be contacted through his website. It's Integral Somatic Psychology. Somatic is S-O-M-A-T-I-C, so it's IntegralSomaticPsychology.com. And now, Roger, you were talking about then you met her later, so pick it up from there.
She came up to me and said, I want to share something with you. And she said, I no longer have asthma. In fact, the asthma disappeared shortly after the session we did. And I said, how did it happen? She said she went home. And the sadness grew, and she just cried. And that's the last time she had an asthma attack. I'm so glad to hear it, but I was also reassured that even when there's a severe psychophysiological symptom, such as asthma, as long as it is psychophysiological in nature, the practice of embodying emotion, even when done lightly, especially in the case of people who have very low levels of tolerance for emotions, can be profoundly effective. I write about such cases in one of the chapters of the book. So when you have in these days, there is so much emotional turmoil, the pandemic, the politics, you name it, and the war, and people are distressed. And I'm reading reports in the New York Times, the Washington Post, that the mental health community cannot keep up with the demand for mental health, not only in every population. So I hope that people can use the practice of embodying emotions. You know, that essentially what they do is that they take a situation in which they're finding the emotional distress, or it could be just an emotion. Sometimes we're just distressed without knowing why we're distressed, especially when there are multiple things that are causing it in the life. Locate it in the body and see whether you can expand that location, that experience to other parts of the body. Now, this might sound contradictory, right? Paradoxical. People want to get rid of their emotional distress. Why would I want them to expand it in their body? And the reason why it works is because an emotion is an impact that the situation has on a well-being. And if you try to hold it in the heart area, you know, blocking its spread to other parts of the body or the head area, preventing it, you know, spreading to other parts of the body, of course we will end up with migraines and other respiratory disorders, potentially also migraines and headaches and other psychophysiologic symptoms. So the practice is simple. The science is complex, you know, but the practice is simple. Expand the emotional experience consciously to more places in the body, and that an emotion can be experienced throughout the body is something that we know scientifically, and I spent a lot of time in the book on the theory of it to establish that. And I also show how when we expand the emotional experience is by unblocking the defenses that form, the body gets better, the energy gets better, even though we might be experiencing more of the emotion. I'll give you an example. I was working with a woman with grief. What happened, she here it was a more of a psychological symptom that she had, that she couldn't get close to her current partner as much as she used to connect to her husband, who, you know, had an affair with his secretary and left her. And so I realized that she was holding, you know, through constriction patterns in the chest area, even through the autonomic nervous system, the muscular of the heart, she was holding things back to prevent her feeling the impact that the divorce had, had on her. So we worked with it. And, you know, and then as it spread, it was a pure hurt. And she said that it felt like 1,000 pieces of glass were embedded in her heart that she couldn't get out. And she, I even made them, you know, express it. Expression is very important. And I think Bernie mentioned it earlier. Expression is very important because when we express it, it expands more throughout the body. And there was so much energy and everything expanded. And then she wrote back, wrote to me a month later to tell me, to thank me and to tell me that that session alone was the price, worth the price of the workshop, because she is able to get close to her current current partner now, a boyfriend. And she had no idea that she was carrying around so much pain in the heart. Of course, you know, I know how much the heart can hold and how it can be affected. My grand uncle, who loved my grand aunt to death, literally, died within a year of his death, her death. And we could see him wasting away, his heart getting weaker, and his, we could see that he was dying. And but he wouldn't talk about what he was feeling to anyone else, anybody. He was a man who just held it all to himself. He had 6 children to marry off, all daughters in India. So, you know, that's what happens when one, you know, does not get the support. We need to get support from others. That's very important for our emotions throughout our lives. We need the support of others. That's the most important thing when it comes to emotions, to process them. But we need to develop a capacity for them. And with support, if you can use the body to expand the emotion in the body gets freer, the energy gets freer, the emotion might get bigger, but it becomes more tolerable. This is what I hear over and over again. I remember a woman who was always running away from the fear of dying. She had some trauma in utero. You know, I think that it was an attempted abortion, and which is a topic now, but she survived. And then, so the fear of dying will come up very quickly if every time something unfortunate happened or surprising happened to her or unfavorable happened to her. So we worked with it, and then at some point she says, I'm feeling this fear all over my body, and my brain is not busy trying to figure out what in the present life I have to change, you know, how to change, either cognitively, you know, how should I think about it differently, or do I need to do something to make this feeling go away, when I realized this had nothing to do with it. So she could sit there and notice the fear of dying, with the brain not trying to figure out what to do or how to think about it to get rid of it, as though it were a problem in the present. So these are the benefits of the practice of embodying emotions. You have your body, you have emotions, and the emotion doesn't have to be, you know, sophisticated like sadness or you know, happiness or guilt or shame, or it can just be feeling bad. I feel bad. Where do you feel bad? Put your hand there. See whether you can spread the feeling of bad there. And see whether you can put your hand on another part of the body and see whether you can connect that part of the body to the first part that feels bad and see whether you can spread it. See whether you can express it vocally, something like that. When you do that, you know, it's something magical happens. It starts to spread throughout the body because verbal expression, vocalization will spread into the face, but also it'll non-verbally express it in other places. And then it's more tolerable. And then the brain has plenty of time to process it, you know, for meaning as well as what to do about the situation behaviorally. And so that's the practice. Now, one might ask, how does it improve thinking? How does emotion improve, improve thinking and behavior? To step back a little bit, it turns out that in the 90s, the neurologist Antonio Damasio wrote a book called Descartes' Error, in which he establishes that, as opposed to the conventional wisdom, that emotions lead to irrational behavior and thinking. Actually, people who have had brain damage, who cannot access emotions, actually do poorly you know, in what they do and what they say in different situations, right? Whereas people who have emotions can generate more alternatives and are better at choosing the right alternative to handle the situation. They think more correctly about it. Now, of course, we know at the same time these days that emotions can also be the fountain of conspiracy theories and all kinds of acts of aggression against others. So I thought, well, if we can find a way to tolerate emotion, and it's in the body, the cognition, the thinking is not going crazy, our behavior is not going crazy, but the brain has more time to figure it out. And that's what you find. That's what you find, that it gives the brain more time to process it. An emotion.
Roger,
yeah.
Let me add a couple of things, because what I keep saying to people, you have to remember that our emotions are physical changes in the body also. It's not just what we're feeling, but what's happening. And in studying actors, because one college student called me, he said, my professor thinks I'm crazy. I want to do a study on actors and how their body chemistry changes in different roles. And he said, my professor doesn't believe it. So I got his professor to let him do it. And what he showed was, when you were in a comedy routine, your immune function went up, stress hormone levels down. Well, the scene he had was a man murders the woman's husband and then they meet. Well, of course, immune function plummets and stress hormone levels go up. So our feelings are affecting our body. The other is, just to keep sharing things, after my wife died, because you were just talking about how things affect you, she was born on 9/9. I have to remember mention that, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But 9 months after she died, my heart went crazy, an arrhythmia.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, totally peaceful with it. I said, well, what did I expect? What part of my body? The person I loved has died. But the thing that was fascinating was when I went to the emergency room, they put me in room 9, and my wristband was 8, which is new beginning, 996633. So I knew my wife was there watching over me, and I didn't have
the synchronicity of things.
But numbers are another way of giving meaning. Because we were married on the 11th, and I have found a dime and a penny. I won't take up the whole show talking about the bizarre places I have found them when I'm going somewhere. But I know that she's there, in a sense, watching over me. And the other, statistically, a study was done of Harvard students. They were asked while at college, did your parents love you? And the answer was yes or no. And then they were looked up in middle age. Those who said, yes, my parents loved me, about 24% had suffered a major illness in the intervening years. Those who said, no, my parents did not love me, 98% had suffered a major illness. And with the COVID vaccine thing, and I've been saying to people, you want the greatest vaccine to protect you? Love. And the sad part is, in the medical field, see, after your name comes PhD. In the medical field, we're not trained to take care of people. One of the things I often do is say to medical students and doctors, draw yourself working as a doctor. You'd be amazed at how many people draw themselves with no patient in the picture.
Yeah.
Now, I do the same thing with patients, draw themselves, you know, being treated or in the operating room or chemotherapy. Because, again, if it's, I don't make up these stories. The devil giving me poison was what one lady drew. And another drew God as the source of her treatment. So I know who's going to do well and who isn't, because we change our bodies by those sensations. Yeah. And last but not least, I found quite impressive. One woman had polio as a child, so she had muscle loss, and she said, I don't like my body, and I don't want to die not liking my body. I'm going to go home, lie down naked in front of a mirror, and love my body. And she said, when I talked to her again, I started on my toes, and I went up an inch at a time, all the way up to the top of my head. And what happened? she went into complete remission of her disease. I tell that to people all the time.
I mean, think of the title. Beautiful. We need to take our last break, everyone. So stay with us with Dr. Bernie Siegel. We'll be back in a moment.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every Thursday and Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom weaved through his delightful stories. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Are miracles real? Can you move from mayhem to miracles? 30 prominent authors say yes as they share their high fives and down lows of challenges, abuse, addiction, and love. Experience hope, the magic elixir of miracles, through the personal stories of New York Times bestselling authors James Redfield, Dr. Bernie Siegel, Sister Jenna, Reverend Temple Hayes, and many more. If you like bestsellers, Chaos to Clarity, and Crappy to Happy, you'll love Crying and Laughing Through Mayhem to Miracles. Sacred Stories of Transformational Hope, available now on Amazon and in bookstores worldwide.
Experience the interweaving of energy medicine, shamanic healing, and more with modern medicine woman Lena Franklin and shaman Jeff Gladstein. Discover how to create a life of overflowing abundance through embodied energetic practices and conscious reprogramming of thought patterns. Mention discount code DREAM for 20% off when you register for the Heal Energetically for Abundant Living workshop at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, June 5th to the 10th. Learn more at eomega.org.
Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back. And yes, you're listening to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. You can hear his show on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every Thursday and Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. You can go on his site and take in all his information and see all his books. He has a few that are have been released recently, and that is Bernie Siegel, SIEGELMD.com. And then go buy the book, The Practice of Embodying Emotions, A Guide to Improving Cognitive, Emotional, and Behavioral Outcomes by Rajan Selvam. And so back to you, Bernie and Roger.
Yeah, Roger, go ahead. You had started to share some things.
Yeah. See, the emotion, we know from the physiology of emotions, I write about it in the book. In the body, it is generated by stressing and dysregulating the body. Otherwise, it wouldn't feel bad. Yeah, and pleasant emotions are generated through regulating a body more, reducing stress in the body. That's how emotions are generated. That's what we know now. So if we try to shut the body down, it increases the stress and dysregulation. That's how we end up working with different symptoms. And I said earlier that if you expand the body, expand the emotional experience in the body, it becomes more tolerable because you're spreading the impact for a situation from the heart to other places or from the lung to the other places. You know, I often give the example that is it easier to carry a bag, a 50 kilogram bag with both arms of one arm. And the client will say, "What? Both arms? Of course. Emotion is like this. The same is the same. Works in the same way. If you spread it out, make all your body parts handle the situation, then the impact is not as much. You know, the stress and dysregulation is not as much, and therefore the body gets better. The energy gets better, flows better, and then it becomes more tolerable, and therefore people have a lot of time to think about it, the situation in a patient way, what to do in the situation, and then they make better decisions, you know, regarding making meaning for the situation and what to do in the situation. But there's something else also that happens. The body, you know, for me, spirituality is a connection between the body and the universe. By body, of course, I include the brain. So when I'm crumpled up like a prune, trying to hold and repress my emotions, I also get disconnected from the world, not just relationally with other people, but in a energetically, you know, not in a woo-woo sense. I'm talking about electromagnetically, quantum mechanically, all those connections that are happening between our individual bodies and the universe gets disconnected. So, you know, when we shut the emotions down, it becomes, what it does is that it also disconnects us from the archetypal resources of the universe or God, etc. And when one opens up, not only does the body function better because of the blocks of the mood, but all kinds of resources come into the body. And I think that's, but Bernie, when he said these images earlier, I was thinking people were representing those images of the connection to the connection between the individual and the collective body. And I find that to be the case in my own spiritual practice. So we add layers of possibilities of healing when we actually start to embody emotions. This is one of the reasons. This is one of the reasons in psychology called Jungian psychology for optimal personal development. Carl Jung, the Swiss psychologist, recommends that we develop a capacity in the body for opposites and emotions, hope and hopelessness, love and hate. Yeah. And major spiritual approaches like Hinduism, Buddhism, you know, Kabbalah and Judaism, and you know, Gnostic Christianity and Christianity, alchemy, they all recommend that the most important quality we need to develop in ourselves is the ability to tolerate opposites in the body, in emotional experiences. And that actually grows us not only personally, but also spiritually. But from the point of view of psychophysiological symptoms or psychosomatic symptoms, it also connects the individual body to the master, that doctor in the world, God or universe, whatever you call it, it doesn't matter. You know, and this is something that you can practice on a daily basis. I wrote the book not just for therapists to help their clients, but also informed public to read the book, to use it, and to the extent possible. And of course, if you get into trouble, you seek a professional. But there's a lot we can do by ourselves.
And let me say this, as I did, if you experience something, believe it. You know, if you go to your doctor and doctor says, oh, that's crazy. No, your doctor's crazy. If you really experience something, don't let them deny it. One of the things I went through, I wrote articles and sent them to medical journals about emotions and embodying and drawings and dreams. Yeah. It came back from the journal saying, it's interesting, but it's not appropriate for our journal.
Yes.
You see, they're taking care of bodies, not your feelings and emotions. I sent it to a psychiatry journal. I got it back again, the same article, but this time it said the opposite. It said, it's appropriate, but it isn't interesting. We know all this. And that's the part that is so ridiculous. People are chopped into, you know, feelings or bodies, emotions or physical sensations, and they're not treated as a whole. And when I was being criticized, many physicians set up support groups and other things to prove I was wrong.
Really?
To show people don't live longer if they deal with their emotions. And what happened? All of their tests to prove I was wrong showed I was right. you know, support group people had a better survival rate than those who weren't in it, and so forth. Yeah. So they became my buddies and supports because they saw that what you're writing about and talking about, the practice of embodying emotions, it made a difference in their survival.
It made a difference. And Bernie, I think now more people are, you know, psychology also has a role to play because it thought that emotions had nothing to do with the body for a long time. Mm. And there are many psychologists here these days that who continue to believe, you know, that the body has nothing to do with emotion. And most psychological approaches couldn't care less what is going on in the body. They will not even ask what is going on in the body as though it were all happening in the brain. That is changing. That is changing. Thank God, that is changing. And
you know, because
I can see it in the practical things.
Monday morning, we have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. Why?
Well, yeah.
How people feel on Monday morning, you know? It doesn't happen.
My neighbor died on a Monday morning of a heart attack, by the way. So,
what did you say?
A neighbor of mine died of a very healthy. The guy who had just passed the health check the previous week, an avid bicyclist, died of a heart attack on a Monday morning. So when you said people die on Monday mornings, I was thinking of Carl. So.
Yes, what's going on at work? It's amazing when you have faith and believe in your body, support it emotionally. That's the part that impressed me, that people can literally have surgery and no pain afterwards. The nurses used to tell me, your patients are a problem. They're refusing medication. I said, did it ever occur to you they're not hurting? And they looked at me like I'm an idiot. You cut a hole in somebody and they're not going to hurt. But it was amazing, and they learned. And a matter of fact, the nice part, this is something I realized, that nobody was against success. It's like if somebody reads your book and does well, they're happy. If somebody criticizes your work, they say, well, it worked for me. And what I noticed at the hospital was, even though we got lots of criticism and my patients were called Siegel's crazy patients, that became an affectionate term because they realized those are people who were doing well.
Yeah.
They did not have reactions to radiation, to chemotherapy, less pain than others, all kinds of side effects were diminished. So they became nice people to take care of. Instead of it being a negative term, Siegel's crazy patient, it became a positive term. Oh, that's one of Siegel's crazy. And this is a quote, too. You talk about emotions. A woman who was told she'd be dead in 2 months, I sent her to one of my oncology friends who I knew wouldn't tell her that and would treat her differently because her doctor had just told her to just go home. You have 2 months to live. So this oncology friend said, Bernie, I know you and your crazy patient, so I'll give her hope. In 6 weeks, his note to me said, in complete remission, isn't chemotherapy wonderful? That was his sense of humor. Because he said it had no use in this cancer she had, a lymphoma. Yeah. But that's the part that changed a lot of doctors. If people were going to do well, you know, there's no point in
Emotional health is going to be, needs to be, if not the most important, at least a very important part of the holistic treatment of a human being when they're ill physically. I think that's very important.
Yeah, in a sense, you don't age in the same way if you're enjoying your life.
Yeah.
And because I always said it in this way, if you lose track of time, then you don't get as old as somebody else. So if I think 3 hours is 1 hour, then I'm only 1 hour older while everybody else in the room is 3 hours older.
Yeah.
I don't know what you think about that kind of statement, but I really feel that your body responds, again, to the internal chemistry.
Yeah. The way I look at it is because if the physiology is relatively healthy because the person is psychologically healthy, that body right. has less wear and tear, and it makes sense that they live longer. Yeah. So
yeah.
There's one more thing I want to add before our time is up, Bernie. That
Please
is,
do.
What neuroscience is finding is that, you know, we used to think that thinking only had to do with the brain, but now they're finding in paradigms of research called embodied cognition and embedded cognition, that even abstract thinking has a lot to do with the body and with the environment. So when we shut down, in our body, it's usually because of emotional distress. Even when we don't want to think something or do something and we shut it down, it's because of a consequence of unpleasant emotional experience, one thing or the other, fear or shame. So when we shut our body down push away emotions, not only we may become more sick, but also the body becomes less available for cognition. Cognition is what? Thinking. And this is something that we're learning, that at every point in time, we're learning from neuroscience, now affective neuroscience, that it's the state of the emotion that is actually driving what we look at, what meaning we make of it, and what we, the ideas that come to us about what to do about the situation, and whether we do it in a deliberate and rational way or in an irrational, impulsive way. So there are a lot of benefits of the practice of embodying emotions, and I hope that even if you don't go any further, just use the principle, that next time you have an emotion in the body that you find difficult, breathe into it. Allow it to expand.
Right.
Don't try to get rid of it. And then see whether you can spread it to other places in the body. And I think that would be a great practice for you to right after this, you listen to this interview. And then if you're so inspired, then of course, where to get more information. You can go to my book.
Yeah. Well said. Well, it's a beautiful way of ending the show. Thank you, gentlemen. And for everyone out there listening, share the show and stay tuned for the next episode with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Bye
Thanks
for now.
All. Thank you, Roger.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.